comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous planet. Thanks for being here. You could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. I'm here because you have a right to know, and because you matter. Because you matter, let me tell you that Jerry Wills, you know Jerry Wills, right? Jerry is the associate host of this show, and he is the executive producer at Expeditions TV. Jerry Wills is going to be speaking on May 13th at the Vision Quest bookstore in Scottsdale, Arizona, which of course is in the Phoenix area. It's not in Phoenix exactly, but it's in that area. So, you know, if you're in that area, if you're or you're within driving distance of that area, you want to be sure that you get out there and meet Jerry, hear him speak, and meet him. He really is a very fine individual. And I think you would be very, very, you would find it a very positive thing to get out there and meet him. This event is sponsored by the Vision Quest Bookstore. Molly Mercado is the proprietor and also a supporter of this show, and I met her. Molly, I was speaking at kind of a seminar, maybe a miniature conference in Tucson, and Molly heard I was going to be there, and she drove from Phoenix down to Tucson just so that she could meet me, and she and her husband came down and met with me and got my autograph, and we got our pictures taken together. Well, it's at Vision Quest Bookstore, her bookstore. It's $10 per person to get in for this event, and you want to do that. Now, I'm telling you, if you are within driving distance of Scottsdale, Arizona, you need to do that. Just go over to Vision Quest Bookstore on the web, and you'll find out all about that. Or you can email Jerry, and he can give you the details. We have here at the Kevin Smith Show something called the Members Community. And the Members Community is really a limousine ride at lemonade prices. There's so much more in the Members Community. You know, it's free to listen to this show. It's absolutely free every night to listen to the show. But when you are in the, when you are a member, you get to watch the show. We have a private TV channel in the Members Community, so you get to watch the show. We have members watching right now. And then if you happen to miss the live show, then you can, for the next 24 hours, still watch it because we capture it, and it's up there until the next show happens. All of the archives are stored in the Members Community. So if you want to access the archives, that's the place to do it. You get your own blog, you get your own photo album, your own video album where you can upload video clips. You get access to forums and Video Galaxy and all kinds of stuff. Join tonight. Help us and enjoy the experience. We're going to step away for a couple of minutes, and we'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is going to be BYOT night. All right, BYOT is bring your own topic and bring your own telephone, all right? So you have to call in, but the phone lines are not open yet. We'll open them in a few minutes. But I've been getting recently emails from new listeners, brand new listeners who are asking questions about things, and those of you who have been around forever, you've been with me for a long time. Some of you have been with me since 12 years ago when we started this show in Kosovo, and recently had somebody call in that said, yeah, I remember when you were broadcasting from Kosovo and you did a show about this. You remember that? But we have some new listeners. We have new listeners every night all around the world, and they have questions about things that many of you already know the answers to, but it's been a while since I have taken time to answer those questions on the air. So let me address some of those, and then I'm going to get into a really hairy, troubling story that has to do with futuristic science, and then we'll open the telephones, okay? First of all, Carl, from all of these first three, they're all in the USA. Carl wanted to know about how do I deal with misinformation? He says, have you ever worried about leading people wrong? I mean to say, with all the misinformation out there, aren't you worried that you have given the people misleading information? I believe in most of what your show is about, but sometimes I'm not sure about some of the callers and what their intentions are and how the other people listening will absorb the info. Love your show from a person that isn't gullible, but... Well, that's fair. That of course, is a fair question. Several issues are brought up there, so let me answer that for Carl and for everybody else. I don't know that Carl is new, but he may have been listening for some time, but maybe just wasn't listening the last time I addressed that issue. Maybe he had not begun listening to the show at that time. So here we go. I'm absolutely sure we've given out, this show has given out misinformation. Unintentionally. Absolutely certain. And any show that says they haven't done it is, if any host out there tells you that they have not, they absolutely can guarantee you there's never been any misinformation coming from their show. That is a totally uninformed or an absolutely dishonest talk show host. See, when we have someone on as a guest, there's no way, absolutely no way, to vet everything they say, because I don't even know what they're going to say. I have a general idea of what it is they will be talking about. And by general idea, I mean, we have, for instance, last night, Robert Morningstar and I, we didn't sit down and plan out everything we were going to talk about. I just gave him a call and asked him if he would be willing to come on the show and let's talk about some of the new developments in information about Mars and the Moon. And he said yes. Okay, and that was it. All right. Now, if there is someone out there that is absolutely spreading stuff that is provably not true, they don't get invited to come here. If a person does get invited to come here and be on the show, and then during the interview they pop up with something that's absolutely, provably not true, then I challenge that pretty sternly. I make them prove it up, and if they can't, then I say that, well, then this is your speculation, or this is your opinion, but this is not something you can say that you know. All right. And so I challenge that. And but if it's something that's truly, truly, truly a lie, they never get to come back. But you see, the only way I could possibly guarantee you that all you're ever going to get is the truth is if I were God. I'm not God. Now, that is why this show has a different way of doing things than most shows. And that is that I give you the opportunity to call in and ask questions of the guest. Now, if you don't do it, and then you go away and you say, well, he, you know, that guy said this and that, and Kevin didn't challenge it. You know, I can't think of everything. While you're listening to me right now, I'm watching instrument monitors. Okay? So I've got, right at this moment, I've got four radio streams going. I've got a television stream going. I've got a communications computer over here. I've got the mixer and the telephone equipment. And I have to monitor all of this stuff and make sure everything stays balanced. And I have to watch that clock while I'm talking to you. All right? So there's no possible way I can catch every little thing somebody says and ask questions about it. And even if I did, I may not ask the question that's on your mind. It's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to pick up that phone and call and ask the questions you want to ask. So the way we get to the truth is by listening to what they've got to say. It makes no sense to do shows about people and their information if you won't even talk to them and listen to what they have to say. I mean, if you're not going to listen to what they have to say, why talk about it? But when they're there and they're talking about it and they're putting the information out there and you have questions about it, then it's your responsibility to ask those questions. We give you the opportunity, and you have to stand up and ask those questions. Well, you don't have to stand up. You can sit down, lay down, whatever you want to do, but you have to dial that telephone and ask those questions. It's not just a privilege. It's not just an opportunity. It's actually your responsibility. If the cosmos put the question in your head, it was put into your head for a reason. And that reason is to benefit other people, so you need to ask the question. Okay? Now, Carl said he believes in most of the things we talk about. Carl, I do want to caution you. I don't believe. I either know or I don't know. Belief works real well if you use it for what it's designed for. It's designed for matters of spirituality and religion. It's the same thing as faith. But when we're talking about events and incidents and facts, and we're questioning whether those are real events, real incidents, and true facts, then we're not in the land of belief. We either know or we don't know. And, you know, I don't believe in UFOs. I know. I've seen them. Okay? I don't believe in doorknobs either. I've seen them. There's one right there on the studio door. So, let me just caution you about using belief where it's not supposed to go. That's kind of, you know, your car has to have water and gasoline. You know that, right? But if you put water in the gas tank, how far are you going? If you put gasoline in the radiator, how far are you going to go before you have an explosion? You know, it's you gotta use gasoline where it's supposed to go. You gotta use water where it's supposed to go. Belief where it's supposed to go works great, but belief is not some paste we put over facts and say, okay, we've anointed it with belief, so it's true. Whether you believe a fact or not, if it's a fact, if it's true, doesn't matter whether you believe it. Believing it won't make it more true, and saying you don't believe it won't make it less true. So with factual stuff, and we're determining whether it is a fact or not a fact, I stick with I either know or I don't know. All right, let's see. Yeah, we've got time before this break to get to this next one here, and it is from Donald. And Donald says, and this is one, folks, this is BYOT night. It's open line. So some of you are amateur astronomers. Maybe you're professional astronomers. And this is a question that perhaps you could call in with the answer later. Donald says, I told my brother about a star that I watch. Whenever the sky is clear, it rises in the north above the mountaintop and appears to move in a northeast path until it rises up past a tree that blocks my view. The reason it caught my attention was the way it sparkles different colors. The point is, my brother says that what I am seeing is impossible because no star rises in the north and certainly doesn't move in a northeast direction. I beg to differ that point because I can watch it any clear night. Have you ever heard this from anyone else about this star or whatever it is? I don't know who else to ask, and you're so knowledgeable on many subjects that maybe you know the answer. If you have the time, I could sure use an answer if you might have one. Thank you. And that's from Don, from Donald. Donald, I don't have the answer. I don't know. I thank you for thinking that I'm knowledgeable on so many subjects. But this is one I don't know anything about. Honestly, while other people are able to go out and watch the stars, I'm inside. For instance, now it's nighttime where I am, and I'm inside. And I'll be here working until sunlight. I just don't know. But perhaps some of our other listeners know. And, folks, if you know the answer to that, when I open the phone lines, let's give Donald, one of our listening family, let's give him the answer. If you know the answer, or you perhaps have a suggestion of what it might be, then let's give him the answer, okay? As I said, I know we have a lot of amateur astronomers, and perhaps you have seen this. Maybe we have some professional astronomers. So perhaps you've seen this and you know what it is. Well, when we open the phones, give us a call and let us know. Okay? Now, let's see. This one is, I'm going to keep the name on this one. I'll keep it back. I'll tell you that the initials are JL. And then you'll understand when I read this email. This one came yesterday. In fact, all of these came yesterday. But JL, he says, I am the Mars rover designer in Delaware you spoke to on the phone 3 months ago. I was really ticked off watching Nat Geo channel when they were talking about Mars. And then in quotes, it says, there are no signs of life on Mars today, end quote. And that's all the email. I thought that was pretty interesting, don't you? Mars rover designer that was ticked off with Nat Geo when they started talking about Mars and saying there are no signs of life on Mars today. Well, that'll give us something to stir up a little bit with, won't it? Well, folks, we have on the website a link that says contact, okay? And when you click that link, we do want to hear from you. And I read all the email that comes in. Now, you do need to know this. This is true. We have several email addresses for various purposes. And when you add them all together, I get up to 500 emails per hour, 7 days a week, 365 days per year. It's not always that many, but we've had up to 500 in 1 hour. And then you clear those out, and the next hour there's another 500 or 300. And the next hour there's 200. And the next hour there's 400. And, you know. Now, the show's been on the air for 12 years. Those email addresses have been out there for a long time. And so the spammers love them. Now, we have to have some way to make sure that we get to the real email. And so we have some really rigorous spam filters that toss all that junk out, most of it, before I even attempt to read. Now, if you click the contact link on my website and you use those pages there, for instance, listener comment or suggestion, you use those to send me an email, I will get it and I will see it. Those are designed to get through the spam filters. So I will see it. If you just send me an email and it doesn't come through our contact pages, you got about a 1% chance of getting through the spam filters. Now, that's not in order to keep people from emailing me. That's to make it possible for you to get through all that spam and get to me, because I want to see your email. So if you do that, you know, I read your email. I get it. I read it. And I do try to respond to it. So if you want to communicate with me in any way, you know, you want to get to me and say, hey, this happened, I saw this, or that show you did last night was fantastic, or that show you did last night really was lousy. You know, whatever it is you want to say, I want to hear it. I want to hear from you. And that's why we have those contact pages. It's not to keep you from communicating with us. It's to get you through all of the spam so that your email gets to me. So go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and look across the top. There's a menu across the top, and you'll see where it says Contact. Well, you click that, and a page opens that has some options. If you're commenting about a show, use listener comment. If you're suggesting that I read a page, a web page, or that I view a video, or you're suggesting a guest or something like that, use suggestion, okay? So, and that sorts it out through the spam filters, and then I'll get to see it. So I want to thank these three who have sent us email. There were more, but those are three I chose for tonight. All right, when we come back, dark stuff.
You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. There is one additional email that I overlooked, so let me deal with that very quickly. From Marta in New Zealand. And Marta wants to know why I play the type of music I play on the show. Why don't I play something that's more appropriate for a paranormal show? Well, Marta, I don't know what's appropriate for a paranormal show. Spooky stuff? I don't like it. I play music I like, and I play music that I think, you know, sort of has a pick-me-up to it and kind of gets you going a little bit, and I realize not everybody's going to like every song that I play. On the other hand, I do. So that's why I play it. Simple answer, isn't it? All that spooky music that people play and mysterious music with paranormal shows, you know, I think that adds to the circus atmosphere around the paranormal. And I don't like that. What people are calling paranormal, we will one day call normal. It's only paranormal because we don't understand it all yet. But we're trying to understand it, and we will get to where we do understand it. And then it won't be paranormal. So playing all that spooky music and all that mystery music and, you know, making things like a haunted house, you know, on a paranormal show. I think it's a circus atmosphere. I don't like it. So that's why I don't do it. All right. I want to talk with you about something that's futuristic science. And then we're going to open the phone lines. And it's BYOT night. And listen, that BYOT is bring your own topic. We'll talk about whatever is on your mind as long as it's in the genre of the strange and the unexplained. Now, you know, that means we're not going to talk about politics. We're not going to talk about religious dogma. We're not going to talk about cooking, and we're not going to talk about how to repair your roof. Okay, but things in the genre of the strange and unexplained, anything that's on your mind, UFOs, extraterrestrials, abductions, cattle mutilations, chupacabra, ghosts, EVPs, remote viewing, all that stuff, Bigfoot, all that stuff is in the genre of the strange and unexplained. So when we open the phone lines, hey, it's your opportunity for us to talk about what's on your mind. And so it's kind of like talk show jukebox. You know, I'm throwing some stuff out onto the table just to kind of prime the pump here. But then it's kind of like talk show jukebox after that. If you don't like what we're talking about, change the topic. You dial the number and say, you know what? I want to talk about XYZ, whatever it is. And that's what we talk about. All right? It's always fun. So, and it's a great time. If you've never called this show, it's a great time for you to get in because we have more telephone time available. And that makes it easier for you to get in and get on the air and talk to me, okay? All right. The faceplate for tonight's show, the graphic that you see on my website, sort of in a ghostly image there, you see two guys, and the caption says, "Did these men just kill you?" Now, you may already know what this is about, and then perhaps you don't. So, let me tell you. Those two men are scientists. One of them by the name of Yoshihiro, and the other one by the name of, I think it's Fouché. I think that's how you pronounce it. Fouché has been doing research and his work at the Erasmus Medical Center in the Netherlands, in Rotterdam. And Yoshihiro has been doing his in two places, at Kobe University in Tokyo and at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the school of veterinary medicine, where he is a professor of virology, has to do with viruses. And you may be wondering about this caption, did these men just kill you? Well, before I tell you what they have come up with, let's talk about futuristic science and why it's important to our genre. Futuristic science is science that turns what we have been calling sci-fi into reality. And that's important. For instance, remember on Star Trek, remember how Bones always had this thing with him that today kind of looks like an oversized iPad. But he called it a tricorder. And he would hold it up to people and it would give him the diagnosis for whatever was wrong with him. It just sort of scanned people. It was portable and it just scanned them. And it was just, you know, small tricorder. And that was so sci-fi, man, that was so advanced. Well, as of within the last couple of months now, it's been reported that there is a young scientist, I think 29 years old, has invented a tricorder. It exists now. So it's no longer sci-fi. Futuristic science has brought this into reality. And remember on Star Trek how they would walk up to this machine and they would talk to it and they would say, you know, I want steak well done. And it would just manufacture that for them, seemingly out of thin air. Well, that almost exists now. By almost, I mean there is, in reality, a machine that will replicate almost anything. Not food. But like if you had a crescent wrench and the astronauts in space suddenly had a need for a crescent wrench, if they have this machine on board the space station, then the other side of the machine can be on Earth, and the other side is like a copy machine, and it scans in 3D. And then it, in essence, faxes that to the machine on board the spacecraft, which then makes, in a matter of minutes, that crescent wrench out of polymers. And it's a working crescent wrench, and what it makes is many times stronger than steel. And so, if they suddenly had a need for a tool they didn't have, they could have it within a matter of minutes with the replicator machine. It exists right now. I've watched it work. Not in person. I've seen video of it. So sci-fi takes things that, futuristic science takes things that have been considered sci-fi and brings them into current reality. So this has a huge impact upon us, simply if for no other reason, it's now no longer sci-fi. It's no longer just something cool and fun. It's reality. But it has a huge impact on us in our current world. It changes the world we live in. How many sci-fi movies have you seen about some kind of virus that breaks out and there's a pandemic and there's all these people dying and then the army comes in and surrounds the place and quarantines it and they're going to firebomb the place and right at the last minute some scientist comes up with a cure, right? Not in all of them. Some of them destruction happens. Well, that's sci-fi. But what these two guys have done, Yoshihiro and Fouché, and again, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Yoshihiro is the main one. But what they have done is they have taken a virus that was already big time in the news and very deadly, and have made it worse. Now, that's not all they've done. But at this point, we will focus on Yoshihiro Kawaoka. And because the name is from Asia, Yoshihiro is the family name. Kawaoka is his given name. But because it's a lot easier for me to say Yoshihiro, that's what I'm going to use. So Yoshihiro has taken... You're familiar with bird flu? Avian flu? You're familiar with that, right? He has taken that and made it way, way more dangerous. Now, since 2003, when they began tracking this, when they began tracking bird flu or avian flu, Since 2003, how many people worldwide would you say have contracted avian flu? Considering all the big hoopla about how they were going to vaccinate everybody against the avian flu, and how there was supposed to be this pandemic, and the World Health Organization was telling everybody, oh my God, this is going to be the worst thing ever. And, you know, it didn't happen. So, how many people do you think have contracted bird flu worldwide since 2003? That's 9 years. What would you think? A couple of thousand? Maybe 10,000 worldwide for, you know, 9 years? 600. Not 600,000, 600. And the reason is it's not easy to get it. It isn't easy for a human to get it. H1N1, it's not easy. Now, what makes this virus so alarming, though, is that when humans do get it, 59% of the time, they die. When you get bird flu, when you get avian flu, you have a 59% chance of being terminal. So you got a, you don't even have a, you know, 50% chance of living. You have less than a 50% chance of living if you get avian flu. So that makes it really, really seriously dangerous. Except, it's hard to get it. It's difficult for humans to get this, get infected with this virus. Now, it tears birds up. I mean, birds get it and pass it around, and I mean, it's just, it's easy for birds. It is, that's why they call it a bird flu. But humans have, it's almost impossible to get it. It is not impossible, but almost. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking about some very dark futuristic science that had brought something into reality. Yoshihiro Kawaoka is the main player here. Now, he's the main player for a couple of reasons. Even though there were two teams, one in the Netherlands was working on this, they did some experimentation and rather significantly different from the process that Yoshihiro used. But the reason he's the main player is because his paper just got published. Now, Yoshihiro is on the staff, is on the faculty at Kobe University in Tokyo, and University of Wisconsin, Madison. What he did, it's my understanding that this happened in Japan. What he did was developed a way for the bird flu to become very contagious to humans. It's a mutant form. He developed a mutant form of bird flu virus, H5N1. Bird flu is H1N1. His mutant form is H5N1. I'm really not sure what that stands for. But then at least the stories, the press reports that are out about what happened say that he tried to leave Japan with some of this stuff. Now, I'm going to say basically in a thermos. He may have had it in some type of, you know, official, like, lab equipment. But basically a thermos of this stuff. And he tried to go through the airport. He got caught in Indonesia. Now, actually, I think it was his assistant that was carrying this stuff through and got caught because they had not registered that they were transporting some kind of biohazard. And they got caught. And so I think that's still up in the air. That might be a pun I shouldn't use here because, you see, the way this virus that he built, the way it works is you get infected through the air. It's airborne. And humans are susceptible to it. Now, he used in his lab test ferrets. You know what a ferret is? A ferret is kind of a long, furry mammal. And the reason is because ferrets respond to flu more like humans respond to flu than any other animal. In some types of experiments, they use rats. In some types of experiments, they use pigs. But in this experiment, because it's a flu virus, they use ferrets. And all of the ferrets got infected. It's airborne. It's an aerosol virus. H1N1 is not. The virus he built is. And where H1N1 has a hard time crossing the line from animal to human, H5N1 that Yoshihiro built can cross easily to humans. All right, now his paper about how he did all of this, his scientific paper explaining how you build this virus, was going to be published by Nature, the magazine, online. And so various scientists and various science groups and various security agencies expressed real concern that, you know, you shouldn't publish this paper because if you publish this paper, information on how to build something that could wipe out hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, will now be out there in the public, and that information will fall into the hands of people who have ill intentions, terrorists, if you will. And somebody's going to build the thing and use it as a bioweapon for a terrorist attack. So Nature held up. I think it was back in December that they had first said they were going to publish it. Then they held off. And what they did is get several other opinions about, you know, how dangerous is this to publish. And they came to the conclusion that, number one, the basic information is out there anyway, and so, you know, we may as well go ahead and publish it. And number two, you know, this would be very discouraging to young scientists if we choose not to publish this. And it may cause some of them to stay out of the fields that require security oversight. Well, you, look, the purpose for security oversight is for the purpose of saying no to certain things. It's not for the purpose of saying yes. The purpose for security oversight is to say no when something is so incredibly dangerous that it could pose a real threat to the world then the purpose for that security oversight is to say no. And any scientist that goes into a field that requires security oversight and does not understand that the reason that security is there is to say no, that's a scientist too dumb to be doing science. And if you'll pardon me, and even if you don't, that's a dumbass. You go into this kind of science knowing that there is security oversight and that they exist for the purpose of saying no. So, Yoshihiro wrote the paper and submitted it. I've read Nature's explanation now, because they are in a real firestorm of bad public opinion. So their explanation of why they decided to publish it, and of course they try to justify publishing it. I've read the University of Wisconsin's comments about how they really wrestled with this and how they, you know, have all this security at their labs and everything, and you know, this thing won't get out of the laboratory. Well, look, University of Wisconsin, Madison, can I remind you that in 2010, you suspended lab privileges for Professor Splitter. And you suspended them because Professor Splitter, under his tutelage, had doctorate students, graduate students, who were working in the lab at security level 3, biosecurity level 3. There's only one more level above that, folks. And they were working with the virus that causes brucellosis. And it was not approved by the university. This is a highly restricted, highly secured virus. They were working with it. They were doing experiments with it. And they developed a strain of this virus that is not responsive to any antibiotics. And one of the students contracted brucellosis. So, University of Wisconsin at Madison, can I remind you that you don't need to be telling us about how secure your labs are? We've seen that. We've just seen it in 2010. And you suspended his lab privileges until 2013. So he can't go back in the lab till next year, after next year. Saying that this thing can't get out in the public, can I remind you that Yoshihiro's, I think it was his assistant, I don't think it was him, but his assistant bottled up some of this stuff and tried to come on an airplane to the United States and got caught in Indonesia with this stuff? Does that sound secure to you? It doesn't sound secure to me. It's 100% certain this stuff will get out of the lab sooner or later. Have these guys just killed you? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted you are here, and my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. We're talking about a very, very serious futuristic science incident that has happened, development that has happened. And the development has happened really at the hands of this man, Yoshihiro Kawaoka. And he is a professor of virology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus in the School of Veterinary Medicine. And what did he do? Well, he took bird flu, which is hard for humans to get, and developed a mutant strain of it that's easy for humans to get. One of the things that the stories are not the stories that are out there on the net now, because Nature published his paper explaining how you build this stuff. They published it. It's online. They put it online. And so everybody that wants it has gotten it and can get it. And so the instructions, the recipe, is out there and available. One of the things that all the articles are failing to mention is there's no known treatment for this if you get it. If you contract this virus built by Yoshihiro, there's no known treatment. And it spreads easily, and it spreads rapidly through the air, unlike plain old bird flu, H1N1. Again, since 2003, the number of people who have contracted bird flu worldwide, 600. Not very many. It's tragic for them, but not very many have contracted it. But 59% of them die. This is bad stuff. And now, Yoshihiro has developed a mutant strain of this stuff that is easy for humans to get and to spread. What happens when you get the flu? You sneeze, you cough, right? And you're expelling into the air virus. And this stuff infects other people that way. Now, I'm going to open the phone lines in just a moment, but first, let me say this. I said it's 100% certain that this stuff will get out of the laboratory. We've already seen, I gave you two examples of how it's already been mishandled. Well, one example of how this has been mishandled. And then another example of how security at the laboratory where he works has been mishandled. But remember, I said it's 100% certain this stuff is going to get out of the lab. You know how I can say that? Because it's out now. Don't panic. Let me explain. They published the recipe. Nature published the recipe. His paper. So it may as well be on the loose now. Telephone number is 623-444-5889. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about all this? Or perhaps it's one of the emails I read. Or perhaps you have a topic you want to talk about. Just give us a call, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about, all right? All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Tony from Denver.
Hello, Tony.
I had a topic I wanted to bring up here.
Okay.
Open line.
All right.
The Soviet paratroopers taking over DIA later on.
That is not paranormal or strange and unexplained.
Yeah, but...
I know you're interested in it, but it's not paranormal or the world of the strange and unexplained.
Some of the news stories about it were talking about, you know, the windshield DIA cracking and the underground bases.
And what was causing the windshields to crack?
I don't know. You've done a show on that before.
No, not on the windshields cracking.
Sorry, Kevin. I got a lot of noise here.
Yeah. No, I haven't done a show on that. That's the first I've heard of it.
Little little kid doesn't want to go to bed tonight. Sorry about that.
Well, I can understand. Do you have a theory about why the windshields are cracking?
No, but I watched Red Dawn last night to try to scare myself.
Did you?
Your show tonight didn't help too much.
Well, we live in a world that's gone insane, Tony.
I live really close to DIA, and I'm concerned about paratroopers falling from the sky and taking it over.
Okay, well, yeah, but we're not going to talk about that, Tony.
Okay.
Okay, well, it's got to be paranormal or the world of the strange and unexplained, but I do thank you for the call. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. What do you think about this? You think it's really smart to publish this information? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
I listen to this radio show every night, five nights a week anyway.
Uh-huh.
And there's something strange and paranormal about it.
Yeah?
You see, it doesn't have a call monitor. I wonder if you could explain that.
It doesn't have a call monitor?
Somebody who takes the calls before the host.
Oh, okay, a screener.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I tried that several years ago and had a volunteer that came in, and I think we tried that for two nights. I hated it. I absolutely hated it because I, you know, you called, you want to talk to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to talk to you. So why I don't need somebody in between.
I agree.
Yeah.
I just think a lot of your new listeners don't realize that. You do not have a call screener.
No, I don't use a call screener. I find out what's going to be said at the same time everybody else does. And if what gets said is, you know, if somebody calls in and they're being freaky and nutty, you know, I got a button here I can push and we can go to the next call.
And the one thing I think you do require is to keep a civil tongue.
Well, somewhat. I mean, you know, on the one hand, I strongly believe in freedom of speech. On the other hand, we do have FCC regulations that say you can't use profanity on the air. And if you do, me and you get in trouble, you see.
Yep.
Certain types of profanity. But, I mean, as long as somebody is civil, they can express any opinion they want to express.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I just wanted to point that out because a lot of people don't realize you do not have a call screener.
That is correct. As a matter of fact, when I'm doing the show, I don't have an on-air producer that's running equipment. I don't have an engineer that's watching dials and making sure everything stays level. I don't have a call screener. It's just me. I'm sitting here in the studio all by myself, and it's just me. So,
one-man radio show.
Yeah. Well, I've tried, you know, Brent, it's been a long time I've been doing this, and I've tried all different kinds of stuff for how to do the show, and it just works better this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's more spontaneous.
More fun, too.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'll tell you what I was sitting here thinking, and I know you've been around this show long enough to remember. I was sitting here thinking, boy, this topic, this would be one that Michelle would have a heyday with.
Oh, man. You're not kidding.
I miss Michelle.
So do I. I got to thinking about this. I don't think he developed it as a part of some depopulation thing. But now that it's out there, it could be used for that very easily.
Well, I don't know why he developed it. But here's the thing. Why would you publish the paper that has the recipe?
Pure stupidity.
I read all kinds of justifications and scientists talking about why it was a good thing to publish it and so forth. But look, here's the deal. This thing's so incredibly dangerous that it has global, global implications. If this gets out, if this virus actually gets out, the information is out, but if the virus gets out, it has global implications. Okay? And why would you publish something like that? That is, you know, and like I said, they, you know, one of the excuses is, well, this, if we didn't publish it, it would discourage young scientists from working in fields where there's security oversight. Well, if they're so dumb they can't figure out the purpose of security is to say no, it, you know, if they can't figure that out, they're too damn dumb to be working in a laboratory.
This is true.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, what was the last time the bubonic plague hit? There wasn't jet aircraft going all over the world.
Yeah.
This thing, it would take 5 weeks to get around the world, or less.
Or less, yeah. Apparently it's very, very aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it may spread even in, you know, less time than 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And there is, at this point, no known treatment for it.
Do they know how to kill it? I mean, in the open air?
No. No.
Oh, man, that's stupid.
They don't know how to do anything with it.
They've created a monster.
I think so. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Brent, thanks for the call.
Yep, goodbye.
All right. So, have these guys just killed you? You know, on the one hand, I would say no. These are scientists, and they've built something. Yoshihiro's a scientist, and he's built something. And he has not actually killed you. But I will say that if this stuff gets out, having published this now, if it gets out, somebody out there whips up a bathtub version of this stuff, and it gets out, and people start dying, their blood is on his hands. He didn't have to publish that paper. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
Hey, Kevin, listen, you need to be renamed Jeremiah, because what you've just brought up is very prophetic.
Really?
Let me elucidate a little bit about the H5N1 virus. The H5 and the N1 are names of proteins that are on the outside of the virus. The H5 causes this virus to identify specifically vertebrate, that's animals with backbones, identifies vertebrate cells and then sticks to it. You know, it's an adhesive. It sticks to the cell. Now, when this virus gets into the vertebrate cell, the cell wants to surround it with a macrophage, you know, with something that will destroy the virus. And it destroys the virus, or tries to, with acid. Okay, and as soon as the acidity in the environment of this cell drops to 6.0, and our normal acidity is anywhere from around 7 to 7.5, as soon as the environment of this virus drops to 6.0, it dissolves the outer part of it, and the inner part, that's the N1. The H stands for hemagglutinin, and the N is neuroamidase. The neuroamidase reaches into the cell that attacked it. It reaches into the nucleus like a grappling hook, pulls the DNA and the RNA against its own RNA and replicates. You know, it grabs hold of the cell that tried to destroy it and turns it into another flu virus, another a duplicate of itself. and then it proceeds to replicate throughout the body like wildfire. So the stronger your immune system, the faster it replicates and the quicker it kills you. You know, and that's the danger of this stuff. Now, I called in last night and mentioned that the flu virus had been piggybacked onto the rabies virus. And the CDC in Atlanta has that. This is the flu strain, Kevin. This is it. It's the H5N1 that's been combined with the rabies virus that has been released into a bat cave, a cave full of bats in Guatemala. Now, I misspoke.
Wait a minute. They released it on purpose?
Well, how else would it have got there, Kevin?
I mean, this was no accident. This is an experiment or something, right?
I mean, whether it's an experiment or whatever, you know, it's been found there. There it is. It's there in a cave full of bats. Bats are carriers of rabies, and you know, they already have this stuff piggybacked sitting in the CDC in Atlanta. Now, you know, this stuff could have, I mean, you've already mentioned how devastating the results could be, and Brent mentioned how quick this stuff could spread around the planet. Now, let me also say that as far as publishing this, the recipe in Nature magazine,
yeah,
I think that the powers that be would allow that because of plausible deniability. If it were intentionally spread into the human population by the powers that be, they could always point to, well, somebody got hold of it there. You know, somebody got hold of it out of that article, and, oh, terrorists did it. You know, but I don't think terrorists are going to do it unless we could say the terrorists are us. And by us, I mean our own global administration, you know, the puppet masters that are pulling everybody's strings right now. And this is very scary business, Kevin. It is out there, and you have just shed light on a monstrous can of worms here.
It is a monstrous can of worms. Well, see, I didn't know that this H5N1 had mixed with rabies virus.
Yeah, and that's easy to do in a controlled environment. Microbiologists do it all the time with other viruses. You take pieces of the RNA and you swap them. You just swap them around until you come up with a viable virus. Now, let me also say this. You know, Brent asked the question, have they figured out how to kill it? Well, viruses don't meet our biological definition of life. Our biological definition of life says that an object or, you know, an entity has to be able to live independent. It has to be able to sustain its own life and replicate itself. Well, a virus can only replicate itself within a host. So it doesn't meet our definition of life, and it can't be killed. We can't kill viruses. There are no antibiotics out there that kill viruses. You know, once they're out there, they're out there. And let me caution all your listeners, all anybody that hears my voice right now, if this stuff is used as a scare tactic to get people to line up and take a vaccination against it, don't do it. You know, because a virus is a virus is a virus. You know, there's no such thing as a live version or dead version of a virus. You know, don't do it. I could go further. I could tell you, for instance, I mean, I'm retired Army. I still live outside the gates of Fort Benning, Georgia. And I can tell you that the Ranger Battalion here has a manual, a doctrinal, Army-issued doctrinal manual on how to deal with the zombie apocalypse. It sounds very woo-woo. It sounds very, you know, oh, come on, get real. But, Kevin, this stuff is real.
Well, like I said, this is sci-fi coming out into real time. It's right out on the table in front of us now. And but I think, you know, a case could be made, since he was cautioned not to publish the paper. He published the paper. The magazine was cautioned, don't publish it. They published it. I think a case could be made, if there is an outbreak and a pandemic, that the publisher, the editor, and Yoshihiro could be brought up on charges of crimes against humanity.
Well, that would be a shame if they were, because I have a feeling that they were all acting under instructions anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, that same excuse was used by the Nazis when they gave their answers at the Nuremberg trial. You have a responsibility to your fellow humans not to do things that can wipe out the planet.
Yeah, that's a fact. And, you know, the thing is, Nature magazine is such an incredibly, you know, it's not like Scientific American or a lot of the Science Digest or something. It is an incredibly peer-reviewed and scholarly publication that I think one out of every 5,000 articles submitted to it actually make its pages, you know, and, you know, nevertheless, you know, I mean, it's out there, and it's in the hands of some very unscrupulous people who don't have the human race's best interest in heart, and I fear the worst out of this, Kevin. But this is this particular program and this issue that you have brought up is far more important than I think people realize. But I think they're going to find out pretty soon.
Well, I think we are going to find out, and I'm sad to say we're not going to like what we find out. Steve, I want to thank you for the call. I have to move along. We have a break coming up. Always interesting to talk with you. Thank you. Well, folks, Steve is a nurse and deals with medical stuff, and he's also former U.S. military. Not a pretty picture he painted for us. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and this is BYOT night. That means bring your own topic, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And, you know, so far everybody's been pretty much talking about this story about the scientist Yoshihiro Kawaoka, who has published now. He's developed a mutant strain of the bird flu, which is very transmittable to humans, and for which there is no known treatment. And then published this paper publicly in Nature magazine. Nature published it, well, not in the magazine, but online. They published it. And so now his recipe for how you do this is out there. And most everybody's been talking about this. The reason we're talking about it is futuristic science. Once it was thought that this kind of stuff was just in sci-fi movies, Well, it's not. It's right out here on Main Street now. And so, you know, I've got some pretty strong opinions about it. Simply working with it and developing it and so forth, there may be some scientific reason why that needs to happen. But then publishing the recipe is the that plumbs the depths of stupidity for both him and nature. Now they're both, he's being very quiet. He's not responding to calls. But the people over at Nature have published an editorial about why they decided to publish his paper. And, of course, what their editorial does is defend and rationalize why. But you people at Nature that did this, I mean, you had the right to say no. Of course, he could have then taken it to some other publication. I understand that. But you had the right to say no and not publish it, but you chose to publish it. Now you're trying to rationalize why you did. When people start dying from this, you are responsible, partly, because you made that knowledge public. Some things don't need to be public, folks. Every cop you know that's been through any kind of professional training knows how to kill people with two fingers. Now, he doesn't go around killing people with two fingers, but he knows how. You know why he or she knows how? Because you have to be able to defend yourself against that when you're out there on the street and some person that you're trying to arrest goes nuts. And if they know how to do it, you need to know, you need to see it coming, and you need to know how to defend yourself from it. Some of the training that your local cops get, they have to sign non-disclosure agreements before they get the training. Not all of it, but some of it. Some of that training, if they're in it long enough, they're going to get training where they have to sign a non-disclosure agreement saying, I will not teach this to the public. And the reason is because it's so incredibly dangerous. But they have to know it in order for them to survive, in order for them to defend against some of that stuff. Well, I think if a cop has to sign a non-disclosure agreement, you know what that is? That is the security apparatus telling this cop, no, you cannot tell this or teach this to non-law enforcement people. And they sign saying they won't do it. And it's legally binding. And I think if your local cop understands this, then scientists who are working in secured labs and had to get security clearances to work in those labs, they ought to understand it too. And they ought to understand that security is there to say no. Security's not there to say, hi, how are you doing? Having a nice day? By the way, did you publish that new paper on how to kill the world? Security's not there for that purpose. They exist to say no. And to keep really dangerous information from being in the public domain. I know there are people who think that all information ought to be in the public domain. Well, I don't. I don't. I think some information does not need to be in the public domain. I think some information does need to be kept secret because it's so incredibly dangerous to the whole planet. Do I believe in freedom of speech? Yes, I do. I believe in freedom of speech. But along with that goes this. There is such a thing as using wisdom exercising wisdom before you speak. There are books out there that are both interesting and troubling to police. Now, I don't know if this one's still out there, but there used to be one called The Anarchist Cookbook. It may still be out there. I don't know. And it had, it was like, you remember the TV show MacGyver? Well, that was kind of like the MacGyver manual, how to build everything, how to do everything. And it included some information that really is very, very dangerous information. And by dangerous, I mean it's dangerous to you. If somebody in the house next door were doing some of this stuff and it went wrong, it could take out their house and yours. So that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. I'm talking about stuff that is really dangerous to people, that can kill people. That kind of information doesn't need to be just floating around in the public domain. And something like this information that has the potential of killing the planet. I may be exaggerating a little, but I don't think so. It's not my intention to be exaggerating. If that may be an exaggerated statement, but I don't think so. Something like this that has the potential of killing the planet, or at least all human life on the planet, if it's got that potential, that needs to be under wraps. You don't need to be publishing the recipe for that. So, I don't know, folks. We live in a world that has gone nuts, has gone insane. There was a time when nobody would have published that. Even if he offered it for publication, nobody would have done it. Let me check the flash message board. Leonardo in Puerto Rico says, "Hi, Kevin. Good show tonight. Kevin, who commissioned this person to mutate this virus, and with what purpose? Keep the music coming." Thank you, Leonardo. You know, I had a talk with someone else about that today. I don't know who commissioned him to invent this mutation. I don't know. But I bet you that if you trace the money that backs his program, I bet you it goes back to the government. I bet you there's government money in back of this. Now, the reason I say that is not because I have any inside information or because I have sinister thoughts about the government funding science. It's not that at all. It's just that almost all big science research has government funds back there somewhere. Now, I will tell you this. The University of Wisconsin, Madison campus, was so concerned that he might leave and go to the university over in Pittsburgh that they built a brand new lab for him and his associates. $12.5 million lab for him and his associates. Do you think the University of Wisconsin had that money in their hip pocket? I bet they didn't. I bet you there's government money in that. Somewhere along the line, I'm betting there's government money in it. I think the government should fund scientific research. But the government has both a right and a responsibility to put a lid on stuff like this. They have a right and they have a responsibility to put a lid on this and to prevent the publication of the recipe. So the government might say, "Well, we didn't have any legal grounds." That's never stopped you guys before. And you, all you have to do, you do have legal grounds. All you had to do was say, it's a matter of national security. Bang. You don't own that research anymore. You do it all the time. Why didn't you do it this time? You had a right and you had a responsibility to the planet. You had a responsibility to the human race. Why didn't you do it? So I know I have friends that are scientists who have a completely different opinion to this. And, you know, their opinion is, well, it's, you know, the research needs to be published so that the information can be shared and other scientists can work on it. And, you know, oh boy, that's wonderful. One of the explanations I read was, other scientists need this information so they can work on this and try to come up with some type of vaccination against it. You know what? You don't need that if you hadn't invented this. Think about that. So you invent the problem, and now you can get like millions more money, more dollars, millions of dollars more. I'll get it said in a minute. Millions of dollars more to invent the cure for what you invented that didn't exist? I mean, you think that the rest of us are stupid and we can't see you're doing that? We can see you're doing that, and it's not funny. We're not impressed. And it's this kind of science that should not be funded. Now, let me clarify. I'm not saying they shouldn't have funded his research into this virus. Probably that's okay. However, they should never have funded or allowed the publication of the recipe. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, it's a little slow tonight, so this is Brent again.
It's slow every night, Brent. Sheeple. Right. Sheeple, Brent. Sheeple.
Yeah, I know. I'm just going to make a comment, and then I'm going to ask for your comment.
All right.
Those who funded this research might think that they are immune, even though he was successful.
All right. Hang on. We have a break taking over. We'll pick up there when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and on the line with me is Brent. So, Brent, you were saying about the people that funded this or that were behind it, and we had to go to break.
Yeah,
so,
they might think they can find some immunity to it somehow, but if they can't stop it, sorry, it's going to persist. It's going to keep going until this planet is gone. They created a monster. Now, there's one person I would like to hear from to see if he can think of any way to do it, and that would be Jerry Wills, to see if what he does could cure it. The other person I'd like to hear from, if he's listening, is James Horak, to see what he thinks about this. So guys, if you're listening, please call.
Okay. Maybe they will, but then again, you know how it is.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Thanks for the call. How it is people have become spectators, couch potatoes, all over the country. And I talk to other talk hosts, and they're experiencing much the same thing. So you're sitting on the sidelines watching while the world's going to hell in a handbasket, when you could be at least expressing opinions about it and getting other people to think. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Pat from West Virginia.
Hello, Pat. How are you?
Okay.
Okay, you're on the air.
I'm just calling up this publication. It's an online publication, right?
Well, Nature Magazine is a magazine, but they have an online presence as well, like Wall Street Journal. Wall Street Journal publishes a newspaper, but they also publish online.
So did they publish this online or was in the actual magazine?
Yeah, it's published online.
The formula.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if the government was really wanting to stop it, couldn't they have just, you know, brought down their site? I mean, you've had problems with your site now. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure it'd be easy if they wanted to do that.
Yes, they could do that. But they also could have walked in to Yoshihiro's office and simply said, "You're a smart guy. You came up with something that's perhaps really going to be useful in research. And it now belongs to us. So you can't publish this." Now, there are people who say, well, that's not right. Listen, they do this every single day. They take over research. And they could have done it. They could have kept it from being published. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just makes you wonder why they didn't, you know?
Well, I do. And, you know, I fully wonder why they didn't. And like I said in talking to them a few minutes ago, you guys had the responsibility to do this. Why didn't you do it? You had the right and you have the responsibility to keep this kind of information from going public. Why didn't you do it?
But, has this been big in the news? I mean, I haven't heard anything about it on mainstream or anything. Is it?
Well, yeah, but, you know, mainstream is more interested in Lindsay Lohan's underwear. And,
yeah, pretty much so. Or getting the big interview from some politician or something, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it's big in science news. It's all over the science news sites. Yeah. And, I mean, there are tons and tons of articles about Nature having published this. And so it's big news in the science world, huge news.
But I had heard that, like, when Columbus and the Europeans came to the New World, that they wiped out, I heard, like some said, as much as like 90% of the population over here just with strains of flu and stuff that they weren't, they had never come in contact with before.
That and syphilis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when white people first started going into Alaska, the same thing happened to the native people in Alaska. And it was horrible. I mean, it was, you know, people dying by the truckloads, and almost. Well, I guess there are probably some villages that were completely wiped out, but it almost wiped out the native population of Alaska. So yeah, that's true.
That we're conditioned to, but they weren't. So that's mm-hmm. nothing like this H5N1.
Yeah, that's something none of us are conditioned to, nor is there a way to become conditioned to it. So, you know, if you get it, you're probably gone. And so it's, and, you know, it's very, very aggressive, and, you know, I can see no justification whatsoever for having published the recipe.
Or for them, did they know, did the government know ahead of time that they were going to publish it?
Yes.
Or was it just the magazine came out and...
No, and the government expressed concerns about national security. But Nature decided that they knew better about national security, and so they decided to publish.
the government really wasn't doing its job then, I'd say.
Well, that's my opinion. You know, they're coming down on walnuts as being a dangerous drug. And they've sent SWAT teams to a place that processes elderberries into elderberry wine, elderberry jelly, and elderberry juice. And they confiscated all the elderberry juice with a SWAT team, and these people are facing court now because they said it was a dangerous thing, elderberry juice. So, you know, they can do that with elderberry juice and walnuts, but they can't do it with H5N1. It makes no sense at all.
Yeah. The world's gone mad, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, my recommendation is not a health recommendation. It's a just a final sign of rebellion before you die. If you get H5N1, you know you're going to die. Go get you some elderberry juice and drink it.
Drink it, yeah.
Just as a sign of rebellion. Yeah.
Maybe the walnuts will be the cure for it.
Well, you never know. Okay, well, listen, Pat, I want to thank you. Boy, I tell you, you live in a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I was international police, the compound they trained us at was in West Virginia.
And what part?
Well, I'm not going to say. I don't know if that's still a secret.
Okay.
Okay. But thank you very much.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah, I don't know. That used to kind of be a secret, and I don't know if it's still, they still train there, and if they do, I don't know if it's still a secret or not, so I just won't talk about it. Okay, I wish I could take that call. However, we are out of time, and I'll just encourage the caller to call us tomorrow, okay? My guest tomorrow is going to be John Anthony West. You know who that is, right? John Anthony West, and we're going to be talking about Egypt, ancient Egypt, and we're going to be talking also about Göbekli Tepe. So you want to be sure and be here for that. That's going to be fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in an insane world, but in the middle of it all, every night, right here, we try to give you information that helps you sort it out. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.